So what's the address again?
3012.
Okay.
And Route 213.
Okay.
Stone Ridge, New York.
Yeah, yeah.
And how far does it think you are?
It says, I'm pulling over at a tech stop right now so I could, I'm south of the Baltimore, New Baltimore rest area. So I'm away south of that.
So I'll meet you there.
Okay, cool.
Cool.
Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Rhea Wincoller and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world.
Hip, hip, hooray!
In this year, episode 281, I'm bringing you out on the road with me over 1,300 miles through New York and into Pennsylvania and back home again. And we're going to be hearing some of the little snippets along the way that I recorded specifically to share with you, such as that audio piece that you heard coming into this episode where I was trying to find the directions to Stone Ridge Orchards. And I was speaking to Elizabeth Ryan of Hudson Valley Farmhouse Cider. We're going to be hearing more from her shortly. But first, we're going to go to a cut with our Northwest Cider Club, which is a sponsor of Cider Chat.
Emily Ritchie here from the nonprofit, the Northwest Cider Association. It can be hard to find a good selection of independently made craft cider, so we launched the Northwest Cider Club a few months ago. The Northwest Cider Club invites you to drink in the Pacific Northwest. We're a region that grows the majority of the nation's apples, and we produce a wide range of cider styles. Club members get insider access to our Northwest cider scene. We'll ship you quarterly boxes to your door from up to 10 producers all in one box. Our early autumn release explores apple varieties. One of our featured ciders this quarter is the Mountain Rose from Art and Science Cider and Wine in Sheridan, Oregon. The Mountain Rose apple, discovered by Bill Schultz near the town of Airlie in Western Oregon, it's got magnificent pink blooms in the spring. It ends up with large greenish-yellow apples with a crisp inside red flesh. Plus, it's delicious and sweet and tart in flavor when you eat it on its own. It's easy to fall in love with Art and Science Cider because they put such authentic heart and soul into everything they do. They're a true creative team. Kim is the artist and makes their gorgeous labels, while her husband Dan oversees the science. Kim and Dan's Mountain Rose Cider is in a recappable 750 milliliter swing top glass bottle. It's a single varietal made from biodynamically grown apples fermented with native yeast. As we continue to learn, every apple grows differently, so I love the back label note. It says, "Caution, pink fleshed apples won't always result in pink cider." This bottle is in our upcoming release for our Elevated Cider Club box filled with four shareable bottles made for celebrations. Find out more about the Northwest Cider Club and subscribe at nwciderclub.com/podcast.
This Elevated Cider box for those special occasions is just a ticket, and I know Art and Science. I had them on the podcast. You could listen to episode 214 called Cider is Art and Science. I absolutely adore Kim and Dan. They are so innovative. Back in 2019 at CiderCon, the Cider Salon, which is all the trade people hanging out drinking each other's cider, I kept on hearing, go check out Art and Science. Go check out. Everybody was just flocking over to the table. And it was partly in due to the artwork that Kim does on every bottle. It makes it a total keepsake. And also, definitely because of what was in the bottle. Way out of the box, really innovative, and honing the skills that one has as a fine cider maker, and that is Dan Rinke. Amazing work. Kim does a lot of the scrumping around for quince and apples, and they have a very nice tasting room too. So remember, go to nwciderclub.com/podcast. We have a new patron at the Cider Chat Patreon page, and his name is Sebastian. And by the way, if you don't know what Patreon is, it's a website that helps content providers like myself keep, in this case, Cider Chat podcast on the air. So there's a number of people. There's different levels that you could join up to the Patreon page. And that really helps support the podcast. I can't tell you how much it does. And of course, we also have sponsors like the Northwest Cider Club, who you heard from recently. But Patreon's a nice way to stay connected and to really do direct donation to the podcast. It really helps. Anywho, Sebastian wrote to me. I always ask some questions of all the new patrons and send them my welcome letter. And he wrote, I have been a hobbyist fruit and wine mead maker since my late teenage years, which I guess are some 15 years ago. After the first 10 years of making small batches for my friends and myself, and that was around the 50-liter size, I thought a 10-year anniversary is a good time to buckle up and go commercial. Woohoo! I dropped mead making, except he says as a service because he does still make mead for local beekeepers, which is super awesome. And he is now focused on apple wines from local trees and fruit wines from cherries, strawberries, pears, blueberries, and elderflower. Sounds like he does it all. My local highlight is a fruit wine from C. Buckthorn, but that's a hell of a job. I guess it needs some acid-lowering techniques. My small business, it's only a side job that barely yet covers the costs, grew, and I bottled nearly 2,000 liters last year. So you're definitely ratcheting up, Sebastian. Way to go. This year, I wanted to do something different. I wanted to make cider. This might sound ironic to you, but it took me 15 episodes of Cider Chat to understand that I have been making cider for years without knowing it. Until recently, I was absolutely sure that cider needs to be carbonated and is basically carbonated apple wine. On a side note, I'm from Wilmshaven, a coastal town in Lower Saxony. Cider, or even the Hess apple vine, is virtually unknown here. Well, isn't that interesting, huh? There is one small company in Oldenburg, which is 50 kilometers south, who are starting their own cidery at the moment, and that is called Nordapple. And we are in contact. He also wants to contact Kilpatrick Cider, so that's Barry, in the next few days, and also the other German cidery on the podcast, which is the 1785 cidery. That was Patrick and Wendy. But he has a huge backload of episodes, so don't worry, you don't have to rush it. There's lots of time to download all those. Anyways, he goes on with, I digress. How did I find your podcast? When I started to think about making sparkling cider in earnest, I consumed everything I could read or listen to. I started a long thread in the Cider Google group, devoured your episodes, read some more, and eventually ordered the Big Book of Cider Making just a few hours ago. Right on, Sebastian. Good choice of books. Basically, I looked for the best resources about cider, and Cider Chat was the answer. Aw. Thank you again for your tremendous achievements in Ciderville. Now that I know cider can simply be apple wine, my favorite style so far is high, usually 13% ABV, dry to semi-sweet apple wines from local apple varieties. That's at least what I am producing, and I tend to create what I like. Right next to this pure apple wine, I really enjoy apple wine with elderflower. I will bottle my next 150 liters of apple elderflower next week or so. I'm heading for 15% ABV with that one. And ABV, by the way, is alcohol by volume. I might have overdid it with the sugar this time. All right, well, he goes on with some other stuff, continuing with, I'm writing too much, but it's an honor for me to be in contact with you directly. I really hope that Ciderville will keep growing. Oh, Sebastian, that's really sweet, and what you're doing is fantastic, and I'm stoked that there's other really excellent cider makers in Germany and winemakers, too, to, you know, work with and to correspond with. I do want to address the piece that you wrote about that cider is wine in terms of the 15 or 13% ABV. I actually don't fully agree with that. I see cider as its own entity and not as a wine. I know that cider is fermented much like a wine, but when one starts adding sugar and ups the ABV to a 13 or 15%, it becomes a different type of product to me. and really steps out of the cider world. You know, cider, strictly speaking, for the most part, is in between that ABV of both, you know, beer and wine. At least it was in between beer. Now beer is so high in alcohol by volume that it's kind of hard to differentiate. But more or less, it's, you know, cider is not really kicking up the ABV with an addition of sugar. It might have different adjuncts like fruit, but when one is adding a lot of sugar to it, it becomes a different entity, sometimes becoming an alcopop. So I'm just going to encourage you to just think about that, ponder it while you're on this journey, and please stay open to that concept. For cider's sake, and much like you'd probably say mead, it's nice to keep it its own category because there's beauty within that category for exactly what it is, and to keep wine where it is too, so that it doesn't get too confusing. So that's my own two cents, and I'm sticking with it, and really stoked for you to be coming along on the ride. Thank you once again, Sebastian, and we look forward to hearing your updates as you move along on this magnificent cider journey. Welcome to the historic hamlet of Stone Ridge. Okay, I'm in Stone Ridge now. I'm just looking for the Stone Ridge Farm. All right, Ciderville, I'm bringing you back out on the road. And as you heard, I had just entered the little like hamlet area of Stone Ridge, which is on the west side of the Hudson River, north of New York City. I was just moments away to be meeting up with Elizabeth Ryan. Actually, she was a little bit late, which was totally fine. I needed that downtime. But when I arrived, I was able to meet her partner, Ted Knight.
Mind if I record our little conversation here?
Not at all.
Good. Good, good. Because it's so exciting finally being here.
Yay!
Okay.
It's so close. I know. The word close is just, what does that mean, close?
I don't know anymore with the world the way it is. I love your little gypsy trailer, too.
Yeah, yes, yes, yes.
Oh, my goodness. It's so pretty out here.
And good. If you look up this way, so actually step up where I am between the trees.
Oh, that beautiful orchard.
So up there, there's a big brown, not the tall fir one, but there, that's a 250-year-old
A live oak, that really big round.
The big round one, not the green thing. The
yes, bright, that's the big a round conifer.
The conifer is pretty short.
Seen photos of Elizabeth standing in front of that?
You have seen photos of Elizabeth standing in
front of that.
Okay. And she's this very large personality way over in the corner.
She is the cutest. I love it.
She is the cutest.
Wow, okay, cool. Yeah, that puts it together a bit. I love it.
And we have an orchard down here that's active. We have old trees up around the oak tree. And then there's orchards on the far side, which is a long trek for most people. And some of those are still active. And then way back, half a mile, is...
on the other side here.
Way on the other side there. It runs about a mile and a half.
Okay.
And she's told you that this farm...
I thought it was like 2 acres. So is it like 2 acres of apples and then you have like peaches over here?
It's more than 2 acres. Okay. So we do have peaches up here on top of the hill here. And peaches and Asia pears, a bunch of apples down there. Officially, it's about 120 acres.
120 acres. Okay, yeah. Great. Wow. Wow. And, this is a valuable orchard.
Yeah.
Certainly.
It's surrounded by, did you come in from that way or that way?
I came down from north, down the New York Thruway.
And you got off in Kingston?
Correct.
Okay, so yep. That road you drove in on 209?
Yes.
That you just turned off, that's one of the oldest.
It feels that way.
It's really old. And yeah. It's not the oldest. She'll use the word oldest, but it's been used for hundreds of years by Native Americans.
Oh, okay.
As well as there's a trail that goes down that way that's equally as good. So we're kind of stuck between two trails, old traditional trails.
Wow, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, very historical spot then.
Yeah. The Breezy Hill one, the original one on the other side of the river, has. We're actually going to do a lot of. Some pears that have never been, they've been in for 12 years. They've just never,
oh my
just
goodness.
Never, this
wow.
is the year. This
wow,
is the year.
So good. All right.
We're gonna get
lovely.
Those.
Lovely.
And then I have a small farm in Milton where you're going to stay.
Yeah.
And that has all sorts of stone fruit
So it's kind of the feed.
Does that have a name of that?
Drumlin.
I saw some photos that Elizabeth posted of some red flesh apples there.
Yes, that probably is it.
They look beautiful.
That was Ted Knight and myself looking over Stone Ridge Orchards, which is, as he said, 120 acres. There's also the other farm, Breezy Hill Orchards, he also mentioned, but that is on the east side of the Hudson River. So we are on the west side here. And then that evening, I stayed with both Ted and Elizabeth at the Drumlin Farm, which is in Milton, New York, also an orchard. And I don't really know how many acres that is offhand. But each site is absolutely spectacular. And up next, you're going to hear from Elizabeth Ryan telling us a little bit more about the history of Stone Ridge.
It's one of the oldest farms in the area, and this farm has been continuously operated since the 1700s, so it's or before.
Wow.
And so it's very famous. That beautiful Hasbrook House was the inn and tavern you passed.
I did, I saw that.
So that was the house for this property. These properties were only recently broken apart. And this is the rail trail, which was the railroad. And this was also another very important Native American trail. And when people came to this area, they were like, look at that nice flat area. We can just put train tracks right on top of it. Mm-hmm. And it is thought that this orchard, there's a 350-year-old specimen tree, specimen white oak here.
That's what I was looking up at the top of the hill?
Yeah, pretty venerated.
I have seen photos of you there.
Yeah, and it's now in the national, what used to be the Arbor Day Foundation, but it has a new name. So it's now in the national Important Trees of America archive. It's been designated.
Wow.
And so the property runs all the way to the rail trail. I feel like it's an honor and a privilege to have this farm. 15, 20 years ago, the farm was going to be demolished. It was going to be developed. And right where we're standing was basically going to be a Starbucks Panera strip mall. There was going to be a dollar store at the corner. There was going to be an Outback State House. And they were going to build 400 condos up at the top of the farm.
Oh, no!
Oh, yes. It's a very sad reminder that there is always a threat of development for these magnificent orchards. And it's really, I think, our time as our worldwide Ciderville community keeps on staying connected to put the word out when you see an orchard that's being under threat. You let people know. Let people have interest in it. Become a cider maker. And better yet, if you can't become a cider maker, drink cider and Perry and save the orchards. In fact, at the Cider Chat Swag Shop at Tee Public, I have a t-shirt that says, "Save Orchards, Drink Perry." It's a great way to support Cider Chat, and it's also a wonderful way to get the word out and have conversations. I want to clear something up to some of you very keen listeners out there in Ciderville. You heard Ted refer to the oak tree as 250 years old. It's definitely over 300 years old, and it's registered as such. I don't know the exact date, but it is up there. And it is so healthy looking. The canopy alone is something that I think one would experience in an old growth forest. So if you could imagine the Northeast at one time, way before it got colonized, these magnificent trees, it takes your breath away. It actually transported me to, I don't know what we called it, like the cider vortex, because we thought we had all this time hanging out there, and suddenly, poof, 45 minutes passed in a blink. I don't know how it happened. We have no justification. I think we were sent into the oak portal or something. And we're late for dinner, which is where we're going to go next. I'm going to give you one more snippet. I'll save the rest of my conversations with Elizabeth for a main episode. But we're going to hear a little bit of our drive down to meet up with Ted for that evening. And I was following her in my van, so I apologize for the recording as it was, but it was really amazing just being there with her and getting her tour guide view on the area, which is absolutely beautiful. I had done a lot of rock climbing in the Schwangunks region of New York State, New Paltz area, many years ago, so it was a bit of a homecoming for me. But in terms of apple, boy, what a history. So let's go there next.
So we're going to make a right turn.
Okay.
the Dutch sailed up the river, Henry Hudson, they had immediate early encounters with the indigenous community. Some of them were very friendly and some of them were not. And can you imagine seeing that boat go up the Hudson River?
Right.
How bizarre. I mean, they literally must have felt like the aliens arrived. Right. And you know, they went up to Albany and back. And for the first, you know, 50 to 100 years, there were just these three little settlements. New Paltz, that we're going to drive through, was settled by the Huguenots very early on. And people started growing fruit. The Hudson Valley was settled mostly for its beaver skins. Early on, the trading was in, you know, beaver pelts. That's what it was about, the Dutch East Indian Trading Company. But people started to settle and, you know, grow fruit and set up nurseries. And by the 1700s, now there's a pretty flourishing fruit, you know, trade, among other things. And Benjamin Franklin, you may know all of this, but he took on Newtown pippins in the late 1700s. He was ambassador to England and then France. And there was a mini ice age in the late 1700s. And even though we had been at war with them, they needed apples. And people, Benjamin Franklin, brought Newtown pippins to England. And, you know Newtown pippins, they're big, nice green apples.
Yes,
apple.
Yes, love them.
The British fell in love with them. Mm-hmm. And the Hudson Valley became like, they were from, you know, Newtown, Long Island, Flushing, Queens. And in like 1820, the first big commercial orchard was built. Sorry, folks. This happens a lot, right?
What?
Because
oh, the deer. I see the deer, yeah.
Stop, though. And
four deer in the field.
So this premium trade started shipping apples actually to the West Indies and also to Europe. And very early on, there was just this explosive fruit culture here. Andrew Jackson Downing, who I'm just assuming you're familiar with these names.
Yep.
Was from Newburgh, 9 miles from our house, the farm. And so, you know, his father was a nurseryman and he was a great nurseryman and landscape architect. You can see why I wanted to come this way.
Yeah, it's beautiful. The view to the right is, wow.
He wrote, I think in 1852 or 1850, he wrote this massive compendium. I have a couple copies. Fruits and Fruit Trees of America. It was sort of a catalog of, you know, 1800 apple varieties. Have you seen Fruits and Fruit Trees?
Yes, I have.
Eventually it went into 23 printings or something.
Yeah.
And he died in a very spectacular, terrible accident. The steamboat was also invented in the Hudson Valley. Steamboats would run from Albany, you know, and they would pick up fruit and cargo and people. There was a lot of partying. And the steamboat, it wasn't very regulated. People would drink, the steamboat captains would drink, and they would race each other.
Oh, wow.
To Albany. It was like a thing.
Wow.
And two of these steamboats were racing. A.J. Downing was on one with his wife and a bunch of other important people. And the boat blew up. The boiler
Jeez.
Blew.
Wow.
Caught on fire. A bunch of people died. He died, saving somebody else. But he died in the river. He was very young and very famous. He had already started working on the Smithsonian Mall and Central Park.
Uh-huh.
He was already commissioned. So he had two young protégés, a guy named Calvert Fox, who our house is attributed to Calvert Fox. Calvert Fox through the Central Park, picked up, finished the Smithsonian Mall in Central Park, and took over the practice. I mean, this was very sudden and very dramatic. But the book, Fruits and Fruit Trees of America, went into like 24 printings. His brother kept printing it. It was the Bible.
Wow.
For 100 years. Because it was the encyclopedia of apples. So that, there was a lot of grape breeding in Hudson Valley, small fruit in the 20s. There were 400 farms in Ulster County growing red currants. Just red currants. 400 farms.
My goodness.
So there was a tremendous amount of strawberry, raspberry. Marlboro was famous. Table grapes. All of these great estates here grew fruit. And until California took off, the Hudson Valley was the center of the table grape industry. And this is Mohawk. We're just passing.
Oh, okay.
And it's going to be a little curvy and windy and misty.
That's okay. I'm following you, so I feel great.
Yeah.
Our own Elizabeth Ryan is her own encyclopedia on the fruits and fruit trees of America, no doubt. But just to kind of back up a little bit, in case you didn't hear, the author was Andrew Jackson Downing, and he was the gentleman who died, he and his family and many others, during that steamboat race up the Hudson River. What a time that must have been. And I think it's poetic that you keep on hearing both she and Ted mentioning the indigenous people of this area who were really set back so much. And it was what a time from the colonization. So that's another sad part of our history and something that's so often overlooked. So I really appreciate their intention towards that throughout their narrative. We're going to be leaving Elizabeth and Ted here. I will say the evening was just spectacular staying at their home. They were so kind to me, and we stayed up late into the night trying many different ciders, and I was able to bring a jug of her amazing cider. They actually sell it in growlers. I don't quite know what it's called, but it is what, as she said, much like a Somerset cider, so like a UK Somerset cider. And I absolutely agree, because I wanted to bring that jug along to the tasting that I had on Wednesday, which we'll get to shortly. But man, what a time. All right, so the next day I woke up and I headed out to
Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania, where on the big old sign on the highway it says, Pennsylvania, pursue your happiness. And that really jazzed me up and made me feel so welcome. I was just beelining, to Dunmore, Pennsylvania, which is right outside of Scranton, a little north to Scranton, and going to the storefront of Space Time Mead and Cider Works. It's also a storefront and a little like nano meadery, cidery, and winery all in one. You're going to be hearing a more complete episode with Dan, but I'm going to just offer you right now a little bit of a snippet. And I'm saying Dan Scheffler, he is the owner and proprietor and the mead maker, cider maker, and winemaker at this place. What a lovely man. The whole theme, once again, is all about the space-time continuum. The countertops in the store are actually solar panels, which really works quite well. That was awesome. And so within the theme of his shop, it was really enjoyable, a sit-down. He had some cheese to taste, and we tasted through his different ciders and some of his really specialty products of his mead. This gives me so much hope, meeting somebody like this who is kind of new to cider making, much like Sebastian's letter that came in earlier, but have so much enthusiasm and really impeccable skills. So let me take you there for a little sneak peek to the upcoming episode of Space Time Mead and Cider Works with Dan Scheffler.
And, okay, Earthbound Pear, look at that.
New World Perry. Local cider, or pears from this is from Ayers Orchard in Ransom Township. nice little farmer, nice little orchard over the hills. Not a huge place, but he goes farmer's market selling his apples and a whole bunch of other produce. Mm-hmm. This is just one of many things that he'll sell.
Cheers.
Roast.
Cheers to your health and to your family's health.
Thank you. Thank you. And thank you for spending the time with us.
My pleasure.
What are you getting?
Really clear. It's like a straw yellow, but not a golden straw. It's a very light, light straw. And, clarity's magnificent. It has a wine-like kind of overture, but, you know, this is a lower ABV, so it's like the
6.9.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we just, right below the...
And it's creamy in my mouth. So that's nice.
That's the yeast. I have to look at what specific yeast was, but that was one of the wine yeasts we used to add some mouthfeel and complexity to it.
Yeah. You have that, it's a little tart. You have nice balance of the acid, mouth water, and you're not getting any kind of like major tannin kind of experience. It's just really smooth, delightful. It's a nice cider, man.
I'm so nervous about these ciders right now.
You shouldn't be. Yeah. No, I have all the confidence in the world. You know, just talking to you before we even sip. This is a really rock solid pear cider.
Awesome.
It is. I mean,
awesome.
I'm not getting like. I've had a lot of perry, you know, made out of a peri pear.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't really know what this pear variety is. But what I do get is the spicy that you often get in a pear. All pears have a wee bit of spiciness to it. A little bit in the nose and in the finish too. So
I'm guessing a good chunk of these are Bartlett pears because he sells a lot of them.
Yeah,
I would
think so.
Yeah. He's selling mostly for eating.
Right.
Most of the stuff he sells is for eating or baking.
And so when you buy it in a Bartlett, you know, you kind of have that kind of crunch, and you don't want it to be grainy, not a good one. It could just be like mouth-watering and dripping on your mouth or down your cheeks is kind of the way I like to eat a Bartlett. And this has that. It has that.
Awesome.
It doesn't have the crunch is kind of like through the acid and tartness there, but it's, savory. When you bite into a Bartlett, it's kind of savory. It's almost as if you kind of not baked it to like where you over and caramelize it. Really smooth and it's heavy. The liquid's heavy. You know what I mean by that?
It has some structure to it.
Yeah, it definitely has structure to it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say legs because it doesn't have that, but it's like a heavier weight in the glass the way it rocks. And so you just have to drink it to kind of experience that and put some cider in one and the pear cider and another, and you'll see what I mean by the weight.
Oh.
I noticed that as soon as you kind of poured it, it just has more viscosity. More fluid. So it's a heavier viscosity than normal.
Yeah, I got you. Yeah,
you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I see. Yeah, yeah. I haven't even noticed before in it either. I mean, I know it has body to it, and that's what we want to strive because we don't want to have a simplistic drink. We want to have something that.
For like a culinary pear, it's absolutely delightful.
Awesome.
Really, I mean, no wonder you won a medal on this. You should have.
I appreciate that.
I would be disappointed because there's no off flavors at all. You know, I'm not getting anything off. It's just creamy, delightful type of drink. Totally quaffable, dangerously quaffable.
Yeah, thank you.
At 6.9%. It's like really.
It's right on the edge of danger.
Just to catch you up, Ciderville. So we were drinking Earth Bound Pear, 6.9% alcohol by volume. The yeast he was using is a DV10. And the format that he packaged this in were in aluminum looking bottles. So instead of an aluminum can, it is like a 12-ounce bottle. Which is really striking to me and just delightful. It's all part of his branding. He's really spot on in that way. Next, you're going to hear us talking a little bit about a mead that he made, which I thought was very interesting, and I want to share it with you. Let's go there next.
You're doing a Solera mead.
Mead,
okay.
Yeah, so
is that common?
I don't haven't heard of it, so I'm sure someone's doing it.
Yeah, I'm sure someone, but I don't know commercially. I haven't really heard that.
So this is called Event Horizon. We pulled our first blend last year, so I pulled 5 gallons out and put this year's. The base of this product is called Andromeda, which is a basic traditional mead made with a Belgian ale yeast. Mm. It gives us a spicy, peppery notes and some really nice complexity.
Wow.
Throughout it, it's almost throughout the whole drink. It's really, really interesting. And so that's what's in there now. So there is a 2019 and 2020 and 2021 blend in here right now. So we definitely want to see how
you're going to keep on. Yep. Doing that as you go on, so that one barrel will live on.
Yeah, on our anniversary, so this is our anniversary month, so this is the June 30th we opened our doors, so we consider July our anniversary month. So August, the first Saturday in August is National Mead Day, and so we'll launch an Event Horizon, this year's version of Event Horizon.
Wow,
so,
very cool. I love it.
Maple syrup wine is
barrel down
in
here.
This one.
Yeah.
And then Dark Gravity is in this barrel. And then we have 2 barrels ready for this year's version.
All right.
Of Dark Gravity.
Okay.
So, again, we juggle the space. What we don't use, it becomes stands or it becomes other places.
Yeah, no doubt. I was really impressed with what Dan was able to do at the cidery, which is in the back room, how well organized it is and how he's able to produce product and turn it over. He mentioned Dark Gravity, but let's take a step back. There's actually a sizer called Gravity, and that's where he takes a fall apple pressing. It's about 13.7 alcohol by volume. He's using the D47 yeast, and he is, let's see, it's a American medium oak stave to stainless tank added during ferment. And then another during aging. And the Gravity was last bottled in December of 2020. Well, he takes that Gravity and then he'll put it into a rye whiskey barrel from Dad's Hat Rye Whiskey Barrels. And that stays around, 13.7%, but it's aged for 7 months in that whiskey barrel. And that's a whole different beast and just adds a different profile to it. In fact, I need to kind of say that Elizabeth started this kind of boomerang thing where she gave me a bottle to give to one maker, and then that next maker gave me another bottle to bring to the next maker. So she gave me one of her traditional ciders to give to Dan, and then Dan gave me the Gravity to bring to Big Hill Cider the next day, and it continued on all the way until I returned back in New York and stopped at West Wind Orchard, which we'll be getting to in a bit. But he has a lot of different product. It's all really delicious, and if you're in the area, it's a super easy stop off of the highway. So don't be, beelining on the highway without taking time to pull off in Dunmore. It's just a pop on and off. Honest to goodness, I'm not kidding you. And it's really easy access. So check it out. There'll be links in the show notes to all these cideries. And of course, there'll be a follow-up episode, a standalone with Dan Scheffler coming up. Let me now bring you to like a little evening spot where I was camping, just to give you a little sense of what I do in the evening as I'm going out on a cider road trip. It's dark out. It's about 9:06 p.m. in Pennsylvania. Having lived here as a child, I really recall, and actually visiting my cousin out in Pittsburgh, went out to the summer cottage one summer. I'll never forget the amount of fireflies in the field. It was just enchanting for a child. And that enchantment never ends, even when you're an adult, because right now I'm at this campground. There are fireflies. Pinch me moments. I mean, they just go on. And I think the podcast is like the perfect way to be able to share that, because how could I put you all in my pocket right now, Ciderville, and do it any other way? So I'm going to be quiet now, just kind of enjoy the end of the day, day 2 of the Cider Chat, Cider Field Road Trip 2021. That was a dreamy evening spending it with the fireflies and you. The next day, I was headed to Big Hill Cider in Gardner's, Pennsylvania, which is located in Adams County. Now, that might be familiar to you if you kind of are watching the Apple Sphere, because this is the major apple growing region in Pennsylvania. I mean, everywhere you look, there are apple orchards. So imagine what it's like during blossom time and how lovely that there are now tasting rooms like the one they have at Big Hill Cidery. Totally accommodating, lots of room to hang out both outdoors and indoors. That's where the cidery's tasting room is at Troy Lehman's property and farm. Well, I should say orchard. And then just like a mile up the road is where co-owner Ben Kishbaugh has his orchard. And that's where the production room is. And I have some great video that I took with Ben. I'll be posting that shortly. But in the meanwhile, I want to just kind of take you on my ride there, my enthusiasm, and then a little bit of a drive that I had with Ben on the day that I landed to give you a taste treat of what's to come. Let's roll there next.
Well, I'm making my way to Big Hill Cider Works, and I've been going through another big downpour again. You can hear it's kind of a loud experience because that's my wiper blades. This evening is a one juice tasting with Erica Jeter and friends. That's going to be nice. But right now, I just want to kind of make it through the storm. Looks like I could finally turn off my wiper blades. I'm so happy that my passenger side blade didn't fall off because I could see it's a little loose there. No way I was going out in that rain. Oh, it's all good in Ciderville, isn't it? It's always an adventure, and I'm just digging being in Pennsylvania. It's beautiful. Right now, to my right, I'm looking at this.
All right, Ciderville, I had to skip the next part because at that next segment, I was looking out a field describing what was actually pepper bushes to saying that it was corn stalks. So obviously not really worth your time. So we're going to switch now to my drive about with Ben Kishbaugh of Big Hill Cider, driving through the back orchard of Troy Lehman's farm.
This is all Troy's. A lot of this is York and Gold, Golden Delicious.
Okay, these trees here.
Yeah. Back to our left, he's got a lot of Rome, Ginger Gold. Behind the bin stack here are a lot of the English cider varietals, Stoke Red, Somerset Red Streak. I'm trying to think what else is back there. Dabinet.
And he got this place in 2013, you're saying?
He got this place in 2010.
Oh, 2010.
Yes.
Okay. Oh,
and
good.
He's been running farm markets.
Yeah.
So he was doing all kinds of berries and strawberries and corn and vegetables all through here, which is now apple trees.
Nice.
Obviously peaches.
Nice.
This is what we call the high-density block. So this is a lot of Honeycrisp, Fuji, down in here.
So I was in the car there with Ben, and he was driving me through Troy's orchard. We took like the rabbit trail through a neighbor's yard, cut down to a road, went on the main road for a little bit, then went into his orchard, and then just wound our way through it. It was really one of the most spectacular rides in an orchard I've had in a long time. Totally grounded me. I get to spend some really nice time with Ben, who is just, both these men are just outstanding. He and Troy, and what they've done at Big Hill is just, it leaves me speechless and gives me so much hope for cider going up both in Pennsylvania and around the world. So we'll be staying tuned for that main conversation. But I'm going to cut now to kind of like a premier part of this whole trip, which was that evening's tasting of the One Juice, I'm going to say initiative, experience, so is what it really is, coming out of the UK. Matt Windle of South Ciders hooked up Erica Jeter, who is a cider enthusiast based in Virginia. She was on her Happy Camper road trip with her good friend Juniper. They had spent some time up in the Finger Lakes, and now we're in Adams County. And their last day, they were hanging out with Chuck Shelton of Albemarle Ciderworks in Virginia. I was so jelly about that, but what can you do? Can't do everything all the time, right? Anyways, that evening, we had this magnificent tasting of five different ciders, and you're going to be hearing next from Erica reading off the descriptions for each of these ciders. I just thought she did such a great job, and we wanted to share that with you. So she'll be reading the profile of each UK cider in the order of our tasting, beginning with Ross Cider and Perry Company. And I must say, how cool is it that I'm in Pennsylvania and New York State, and we're melding the worlds of our good friends over in the UK. So rock on to everyone. And here now is Erica Jeter.
Fermented with wild yeast in tank. Racked and matured in tank once primary fermentation was almost complete. Bottled with a small amount of sugar for conditioning. Unfiltered, unpasteurized, and bottle conditioned. Rossonwy is all in the name. Rooted in the cause of showing what the cider apples and peri pears of their home can say. Their library of single variety bottlings gives an insight into the nature of cider and peri and the nurture of the maker. Dry cider, pure and redefined.
Rossonwy.
Yes.
Cider and Peri Company. And what is the tasting notes?
Oh, don't make me
Are you really?
Oh, please.
Oh, my God.
We need help because we're going back to it. We've gone through the whole
thing. I need another sip.
All right.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, we'll see what you
think. I'll sip, too, in my Ross cider cup.
Unapologetically cider on the nose, like cracking open the barrel with the maker. Bold aromatics with an orchard floor boasting fallen apples. And an almost cheese rind character on the back.
Ooh.
The acidity sits up front with bold green apples before a spicy, savory note kicks in. Leather and a soft, buttery note battle it out. Okay.
Whilst,
tannins draw out the finish. It's so well written. Everything in its place. The fermentation amps up the apple, and it wears the name cider on its sleeve with pride. Nice. Rossonwy cider.
Just to be a little transparent here, this is quite late in the evening. We have already gone through a tasting of each of the bottles, and now we're actually reading the tasting notes. And Eric was kind enough to do that, being put on the spot. So not being a professional podcaster herself, I think she did a tremendous job and we were having a bit of fun. So we're going to be continuing on now with another well-known cider maker.
Okay. Tom Oliver's is fermented with wild yeast in first use, how did you say it?
Isla
whiskey barrels. Matured in same barrels on original lees. Blended with 3% partially fermented fox whelp cider, unfiltered, carbonated, and pasteurized.
The Oliver Ride.
Oliver's cider is all in the balance, blending varieties and vintages to create true expressions of the cider apples and peri pears of Herefordshire and the Three Counties. Through fermentation with minimal intervention, Oliver cider always brings the best out of the fruit. Unmistakably cider.
Next up is the third bottle in the One Juice tasting.
Fermented with wild yeasts in tank, matured in tank and rum barrels.
That's what it is, yeah.
Portions of tank and barrel batches blended and bottled with a small amount of sugar for conditioning. Mm. Unfiltered, unpasteurized, bottle conditioned. Little Pomona is all in the approach, with cider being just the beginning. From their first bottlings to their latest experiments, it is their inventiveness in the pursuit of flavor that stands out from the first sip to the last, when a sense of place meets a sense of wonder.
Little Pomona.
Right?
Erica now delivers the tasting notes from our fourth bottle in the One Juice UK tasting.
Juice pasteurized to remove wild yeast and fermented with a pure culture of Brettanomyces.
What? Changing it up at Hogan's.
Crazy time. Once fermentation was complete, the cider was filtered and bottled with champagne yeast and a small amount of sugar for conditioning.
Wow.
Unfiltered, unpasteurized, bottle conditioned. Mm-hmm. Would you like to hear Martin Goodwin Sharman's take on Hogan's?
Yes, please.
Hogan's is all in the quality. All of their products are made from fresh pressed cider apples, bringing their beautiful, bold flavors out in clean, no-nonsense drinks. The perfect balance of modern and tradition.
Once again, that was a Hogan's bottle in the One Juice tasting, and next up is Pilton Cider.
Pilsen. The juice was keeved to retard fermentation, filtered to remove wild yeast, and fermented with, I don't even know how to say this, Turulospora delbrueckii in tank. Yeah. We'll look that up. We'll Google that later.
I think I just had a cider that was fermented with that yeast.
Really?
Yeah.
Matured for 2 months in ex-whiskey barrels, sterile filtered, tank carbonated, unpasteurized.
Whiskey spelled with no E.
Oh, right?
Whiskey.
Hello.
Do you want to hear the Pilsen characterization?
I mean, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
We are in Pennsylvania.
We are in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah? Oh, really? Is that what they say? Okay, yeah. Cool.
Okay. So, Pilsen is all in the experimentation, bringing a sense of fun to cider.
Right.
From taking the art of keeving and bringing it to Somerset, each bottle is a nod to the deeply rooted traditions of the area, with a wink of inspiration from the worlds of natural wine and craft beer.
You could tell how much fun we were having there. And the fact that Erica was able to stay focused and read from that booklet, I really commend her for all that she does, all of who she is, and for the many more times to come to be able to hang out with her. If you get an opportunity, it's always time well spent. The next day on Thursday, early in the morning, I got up. Actually, I flew my drone around the morning campsite area, Big Hill, packed that away, and then hit the road for Taddy Bogle's Cider Works in Acme, Pennsylvania. That meant for me, I was going to be on the road for about a 2.5-hour drive out towards Pittsburgh, south of Pittsburgh, to meet up with Kurt Henry. So I'm going to share with you a little bit of that trip out there. And I just want to say first, before I go anywhere, that Kurt Henry, like Erica, has been a very long time supporter of Cider Chat way before he became a commercial cider maker, which really only happened recently that they opened Taddy Bogle, and is now part of the Cider Going Up campaign at the Cider Chat Patreon page. And he is partially sponsoring this year road trip 2021 that I took, which, you know, the guy is not only an amazing businessman, a fantastic cider maker, but he has a heart of gold. And what is taking place at Taddy Bogle, the future looks bright. I just want to say that it's absolutely amazing. And that is partly because this guy has such great vision. So I'm going to cut to my first conversation with him as he is describing himself much like a friar. In like once like a Catholic religion, and how he sees his position in cider for the greater community. Let's cut to that with Kurt Henry of Taddy Bogle now.
Strength, it's out preaching to the to the people.
To the people.
Get them hooked on the religion.
And right, the religion of cider. I love it.
Then I pass them off to the higher ups like Ben Troy and the other Ben, who's like, you know,
Ben,
a priest.
Ben
and
a plowman.
And Ben,
yeah.
Kishbaugh. Yeah.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So they're, you know, they're like the priests. And then you get a taste of that. And then, you know, you go on to the bishops or the cardinals that are, you know, like Eleanor and Steve Wood.
Oh.
And some of the Pacific, Reverend Nat out,
yeah,
west. And,
yeah.
You know, most people all get together, and when you see the white smoke come out, it's, you know, they've elected a new pope like Eric Bordelais or, you know, somebody
awesome.
Like that.
Pretty fun analogy. So you're the friar, though.
I'm the friar.
You're the friar.
Yeah, I get people in here,
well, you're,
have a good time.
You're like a critical.
Let them listen to music, and then, you know, the journey starts there, and you just hope that you can sort of push them on to,
mm-hmm,
you know. Yeah, I always say that if a right and proper Englishman, Frenchman, or Spaniard comes in here and says, give me a right and proper cider, I'd give them cider, and they'd say, yeah, that's a right and proper cider. If I gave them any of the others, they'd say...
Like Bumblekite, a blackberry at 8.3% ABV, which is, you know, that's going to wake you up.
Yeah. You know, they're going to say that's a bloody abomination to the eyes of God. Someone's put fruit in my cider.
Not everybody's going to say that.
But Bumblekite actually is the Scottish word for blackberry.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have the Scottish theme going here.
Yeah, you do.
That's what the name means, Taddy Bogle.
Taddy Bogle.
is it's a compound Scottish word, so tatty meaning potato, bogle meaning spirit or ghost, so literally potato ghost. But it's what in the UK you call a scarecrow,
mm-hmm.
which I thought went well with cider. You know, cider's thought of as a fall, at least sweet cider, which I hate that we have to differentiate between sweet cider, hard cider. I'd much rather apple juice.
And cider, yeah. You know. Well, we'll get there, you know. But you got to come to the fryer
right.
and get turned on to cider. And so your role is really important in that because that's that initial interaction, and you're such a good publican in that way.
Yeah, exactly.
You really are. So
we all have our roles, you know.
And it's good to see what it is and allow them to grow.
Yeah, absolutely.
The way Kurt Henry is able to paint a picture through the use of metaphors is fun for the listener, but it also speaks to how he approaches business in general. He's able to compartmentalize each stage and have the bigger picture all along, making it very simple steps to follow. And that's kind of the experience for the drinker at Tatty Bogle, too. You pull in, you see these red barns, you have outdoor seating, you have indoor seating. Eventually, that indoor seating place will be just the production area. There's going to be a new tasting room being built overlooking this magnificent view. There's an orchard that's already planted. There's going to be a pond that's being built. It's a lot of production happening there, all going in the right direction because he's quite methodical in his approach. So this is a site to watch for in an area where there's not a lot of cider being made. I mean, definitely around Pittsburgh proper, but further afield, not so much. And having him at the helm here with his family, being surrounded by his family, it's just amazing. I was super impressed. I didn't know quite what to expect, and to find that, it just made me so happy and really proud to know this guy. I'm going to take a little pause here, and then we'll be coming back with my final day on the road, which was a doozy, because that evening after leaving Tatty Bogle, I headed back to Adams County that night, crashed at a local campground, and then met up with Ben Wank of Plowman Cider.
Walking through the orchards.
It is a hot day in July on my way to Plowman Cider. And got here, thankfully, because I took a bunch of photos on my map, my Google Map doohickey on my smartphone last night, because I was staying at a state park called Pine Grove Furnace State Park, and no cell coverage there. And kind of in the middle of the forest. So after waking up and taking a little swim at Fuller Lake, I just was able to open up my photo album app on my phone, and via three little photos, screenshots of my map, I'm able to get here, and I'm seeing lots of apple trees on the way. It was kind of a fun back road way. In fact, there's even a road on the way here called Back Road. I didn't have to take that. I took some other ones. But anyways, I'm here. It's kind of like on top of the world, going by Piney Apple Golf Course. And we got cornfields on either side, apple trees too. And you come up on these ridges in Pennsylvania. They're like little mesas, right, in the middle of this whole state. And there's views everywhere, views of beautiful farmland. So let's see, we should be coming up shortly to meet up with Ben here and have a little chat.
Okay, Ciderville, what then actually happened was kind of funny and a little terrifying, only because I was going in the wrong direction, going to the golf course. I turned around, went through the center of Wanksville, I think it is, and then was realizing, you know, I'm not seeing Plum and Cider, no sign or anything. I did go by one little farm called Three Springs Farm, which I later found out was a location. And I happened to notice like a growler in the window, something like cider making related. And I had that in my memory bank, but I drove by it still looking for Plum and Cider and pulled over to the side of the road. And wouldn't you know, it was one of those little spots that kind of like suck you off. And all of a sudden I started feeling my car going sideways. Was able to get out of that quickly enough, banked you know, a Yui, headed back to that Three Springs to say, hey, I'm looking for Ben, ran into his father. And Ben was about 20 minutes coming out from the farmer's market in Gettysburg or something like that, and got to sit down with his father and talk about the history of that area. I'm going to save that for the featured conversation with Plum and Cider, because then I followed up with Ben. And wow, you know, it's those kind of moments that it's serendipity and it's just meant to happen. So I'll leave that there for now as a teaser for you to make sure that you subscribe now to this podcast or follow it, whatever you want to call it. Check it out, because there's some amazing podcast episodes coming up. I don't know how many cideries we had on this trip, but it's a whole bunch. And guess what? There's still one more on this day. So take this in. I'm down in Adams County, Pennsylvania, just about on the Virginia border, and I'm heading home that night. It's Friday, and I've kind of sucked up all my time and cash, and I had to make it home. So that evening, I was going to head back towards Hudson Valley with one more stop to West Wind Orchard, where I've been wanting to meet up with the cider maker for a long time. And just following this place on Instagram, I knew it was the bomb, because of the vision that Fabio Cizzola is holding for this place. He is a cider maker, but what's really interesting is this site, which is a biointensive orchard, was a happening scene before it even started offering cider. So it was a U-Pick scene, and he has this restaurant on site with pasta. I mean, he's Italian. He, as he said, he knows food. Pizza, there's zuppa or soup, right? Then there's small plates and big plates, and you get some espresso there. Oh my God, it's just like a gastronomic experience. And what you do is you walk through this little gate, and then you walk into the scene where there's different outside yard games happening. There's a swag room, and then you go into the main room where you could kind of do your ordering. You could get your espresso if you want. If you've had a long drive or you drank a lot of cider and you're heading back in and you want to just kind of chill out, you got it all there, and it is outstanding, and his ciders are impeccable too. So I'm going to hold back on that conversation. It was something I was able to squeeze in, and I just mainly have my feature chat with him, which I'm going to hold for a later episode. But in the meanwhile, there are a lot of events happening at West Wind Orchard. So if you get there, you want to do it. I'm going to be uploading some short video clips that I took while there. Actually, I'm having a series coming out with all these different sites. I'll be putting it up on the Cider Chat YouTube channel, so you'll be able to follow along there. And planning on doing a little series on this trip to TikTok. So hang tight. I got a lot of material that I need to square away. And so that was my Friday evening. It ended at West Wind Orchard, which was absolutely perfect. I hope you enjoyed this little snapshot of my road trip as much as I did in sharing it with you. And I'm going to roll out at the end of this episode. You'll hear, I'm going to skip the We Like Cider song for now and just put in a little bit of the scene I experienced on my way from Adams County, driving back through like Dunmore again to get to West Wind Orchard. You could check that out at the end of this episode. And with that, I leave you here. This is Rio Wind Caller, signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
So sometimes you end up right back where you started from. I'm back in Dunmore, or Scranton, I'm not really sure. I have no data. Somehow my data scene is just blip. I just see the spinning wheel on my GPS going round and round. And at least I got a map, so that's helping me. Take it slow, and there's a lightning storm and torrential rain. I mean, it is like rain where one might be a little bit concerned about flooding at this point. So, we're just going to take it slow, because that's all you could do sometime. Just take it low and slow, let the rain come down, and hope that everybody's safe around us out on the highway. The highway itself, the reason why I'm here is because the highway was pretty much at a dead stop. There's a number of construction things out there, and I just didn't want to sit at like 90 degree weather waiting for the rain, not the rain, but the traffic to stop. So I got off and started jumping around, which is something I've done many times before in my work life in Pennsylvania, getting stuck on roads. Big puddles everywhere, like, whoa, big puddles. Hopefully the car won't dip out into something. It's kind of exciting right now. This is like flooding conditions. And the day I try to get home. But so be it, you know. We'll just deal with it as it goes, because it's a cider bus, and we just stay in happiness, because as my good friend would say, there's always something to worry about. So, I know I'm near Spacetime Mead and Ciderworks, and Dan would be more than happy to open up the door for me. He probably is open today, but I'm going to keep trying to make my way out to New York and see where it takes me. All right, over and out for now.
Some fun.
Yeehaw!